This is where I wait for you to say something interesting, and then I try and time the button mash. So say something interesting.
Something interesting?
Start the game already!
This week, I'm drinking Shane's Leftovers.
And because I left my leftovers there, I no longer have a box of alcohol. Are you drinking cider?
I am. You left a single cider in my fridge and I'm drinking it.
That's funny. I'm desperate. I didn't go shopping for alcohol. So I'm back to whatever I decided not to take. I left a bottle. I left a bottle of weird tequila in your fridge as well.
I noticed.
So I had about this much left in my butter tart depanser. And another bottle of weird tequila that I got from my mom. This one has, like, it is the most touristy tequila. It has, like, a little sombrero hat on the bottle. In hindsight, it might be a problem because it looks like it's, like, hot glued to the top of the bottle, not just the lid.
Oh, all right. Well, quality control.
But for those of you that can't see it, it's got a little sombrero on. It's got a little Riviera Maya Mexico kind of throw over the bottle. See if it's I can even get it open.
Serape or a poncho potentially.
Yeah.
It's also a little bit Bandido, because I'm pretty sure those are supposed to be bullet bandoliers.
Maybe. I'm sure it's offensive and racist to somebody, but whatever.
I'm sure. Yeah.
The tourists must have gobbled it up. So thanks, Mom. Because of you, I have something to drink on this episode. That's probably too much tequila in there.
Pretty much any tequila is too much tequila.
Now it's a weird thing because, like, the lid has glue on it. So, oh, like, do I try and put it back on?
Well, you've opened the bottle. Now you have to drink it.
I put a lot in, and now I'm going to just throw some Dr. Pepper on top of that to give it some color.
That's some tequila.
Who knows? Maybe this is the best shit in the world.
You know what, though? The evidence suggests maybe not.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it has an actual name. So if there's tequila snobs out there, this is
Yokiro Tequila.
I don't know if that's supposed to be a C or an O. Orendane, Crendane, Blanco.
Mm.
I don't know.
Timu Tequila.
It had a hat on it. I thought the hat was funny.
I mean, yeah, it as is well established. I drink my alcohol based on the color and shape and size of the pattern on the container. So I really can't. I can't throw any shade on you for, hey, my tequila has a neat hat. I'm going to drink that.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, it's good then. That face needs to go on our OnlyFans. That was an O face.
Yeah, that face is already on our OnlyFans. It's the only face I do on there.
So to serious topics. Last week you expounded on the idea that science got better with coffee. And I had to think about it. And I think, yeah, that makes sense. And it's an interesting sort of perspective on history. But coming at it from the other end, and this is a little bit of a cliche, but I think that alcohol makes for better art. And I did the absolute barest minimum that one can do of research on this topic, in that I went to Google and I typed in alcohol artist, mm-hmm. right? And I like Google came back immediately with like 30 million hits. You know, Van Gogh, Toulouse-Lautrec, Francis Bacon, Jackson Pollock. There's a whole lot of famous writers who are all, you know, associated with that. Hunter S. Thompson, Tennessee Williams, Edgar Allan Poe, Truman Capote, Jack Kerouac, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I have no idea if this is correlation or causation. And I don't think it matters. But I thought it might be interesting to talk about, like, does alcohol actually make art better, or are, you know, is that kind of mind just attracted to alcohol?
I think there's going to be a little bit of both. Now, I'm going to bring up another podcast. I think I've mentioned it down here, maybe in Parting Gifts at one point in time, We Have Concerns. Sort of a science-adjacent podcast where they spend most of the time just bantering and making jokes while talking about something reasonably scientific, be it a study that's done or some sort of research paper that's published sort of in official channels for peer review, etc. And it wasn't about alcohol. It was about marijuana and the impact that it had on creativity. And in a reasonable sample size study with control groups, etc., like done properly, what they found was interesting in that it didn't seem to, in any way that they could measure, impact creativity at all. But what it did is make people who were partaking more receptive to the creative process in a couple of ways. And most of it boiled down to being less dismissive of dumb ideas. You know, if you think of art and creativity as something that like has to go from throwing something at a wall to refining it to adjusting it until it's, you know, it's right. Mm-hmm. People that are more sober tend to dismiss ideas immediately that might have like a high ceiling in terms of creative potential once adjusted, once tweaked, and also just generally be more open to other people's ideas and feeling less defensive or less in need of being in control of the creative process. Mm. Now, you know, for you know, you think of your stereotypical stoner in this case, because it was about marijuana, that makes a lot of sense. But I suspect that alcohol probably has
similar
effects where you're more willing to explore one of your own ideas that you would dismiss out of hand because you're so critical of yourself and your own art almost in real time. And sometimes you can find that magic.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm not going to be able to talk by the end of this episode.
Your pants might fall off all over again.
What I will say is it is not good tequila.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I just don't like tequila to begin with. The difference, I guess, I wonder how much of it is an environmental thing too, because you hear, or at least there's the trope in movies of, you know, all the best newspaper reporters congregate in the hotel bar in whatever far-flung place they are gathering news. So I wonder how much of it is just like, well, if you're going to be a writer, you also have to be an alcoholic. And it just becomes sort of the socially acceptable thing.
Yeah. And you see that in other sort of assembly line creativity industries. Think the ad industry. You know, go back and watch Mad Men. Like, yeah. That's a reflection very much of how advertising and marketing industries worked right up until the sort of early aughts.
Like last week?
Yeah. I think things have changed a little bit, but even when I started in the industry myself, there was very much of, I'm not going to name names here, but we had our creative director often would have a day or two before a pitch was scheduled, he'd have nothing, right? Like he just wasn't tapping into whatever it is that he normally has. And he'd do a thing where he'd spend the night at the office drinking, smoking. You can almost imagine the Charlie Day meme image of like shit written on a wall and red string and stuff like that. And then you'd walk in the next morning. He'd still be at the office. He'd invite you into, we had this boardroom that we used as sort of a creative space too. It had all like cork wall and stuff. He'd walk you through, and he was very old school. So it was like chart paper and notes, and he'd walk you through the process and the magic would be there. Like it would happen all in one night, whether it was the alcohol, whether it was the pressure, or whether it was just that's the creative space where he's normally the most creative. So he has to put himself in that environment. I don't know what it was, but I can say that I saw it in action, you know?
Well, I mean, if it works, it works, right? Going back to the idea that you don't throw out crazy ideas, as quickly. I noticed that in brainstorming things that we do at work, because there's a lot of times, and I mean not so much anymore because my job has changed, but previously where we were trying to invent something that had never existed before, right? And everybody would be sitting around, and there were a large number of people who would, they would hear something, they would immediately just go, yeah, that's not going to work, right? And those people were a lot of times sort of the older people in the room. The people who, this is the way we've always done it, and this is the way that we will do it again. And that's not written down in a big old engineering manual somewhere, so we're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? And like the meetings that I was in would, like people would invite me to these meetings specifically because I'm not ashamed or nervous about, here's a crazy idea. Like, let's make it out of mashed potatoes. Right? Like, what are the problems with that? Not so much because I think it might be a solution, but because it makes people sort of loosen up and go, oh, what if? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what is, okay, so what does that mean? That means that, okay, like obviously mashed potatoes won't work, but here's why mashed potatoes won't work. And, you know, okay, here's something that might work, right? Like it's like a spark. It's a beginning. It's the kindling of the fire. It's not the coals that you're going to roast the marshmallows over. But you need to throw some pine needles in there at the beginning to get it started.
Yeah. And, you know, if substance abuse leads to somebody hearing, let's use mashed potatoes. And instead of just being, you know, what are you, fucking stupid? They're like, whoa, I mean, what if we used mashed potatoes, man?
Yeah, exactly. You only need to entertain the idea for about a second and a half.
Yeah, there's that sort of barrier to entry that you got to get beyond. And then once you start thinking of the idea for its own merits rather than dismissing it just on principle.
Yes.
Because it is outside the box or whatever. Whatever your reason is. And even like turning that around to just single person being creative, dismissing your own ideas.
Yes.
You know, because you're overly critical and not exploring them works kind of the same way.
I mean, who is their own worst critic? Certainly mm-hmm. not me. Every time, all the time, about everything.
Took us 72 years to start recording this podcast for some reason.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's be honest. Alcohol is not helping this art. But it does make it more fun. And it makes it easier to just throw out stupid shit and go, meh.
Whatever. Fine. I got a built-in excuse for my bad ideas now.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah, man, tequila. I was drunk. Yeah.
Yeah.
Must have been the tequila. So if you don't like anything I say in this episode, blame it on the tequila.
No, I blame everything on tequila. I, for one, blame techno. So here's a funny thing. So you remember that H Bomber Guy video on plagiarism that you recommended to me about a year ago?
Yep.
Well, it takes him about 8 months or so to make videos like that, and it took me almost a year to watch it, but I did actually finish watching it today. And I just want to mention, you know, if he is listening, there was an absolutely banger joke at 3 hours and 30 minutes in. There were some other bits that were fine, you know, sort of amusing, but, it was an absolute banger at 3 hours and 30 minutes. So if you want to go and watch a 4 hour video, it is a good one. I recommend it, but at three hours and 30 minutes, there's a joke that will make you, but you have to watch the preceding 3 hours and 30 minutes for the joke to make sense. There's one other thing that I got out of the reason I brought it up actually is because he was talking like plagiarism is obviously a problem. And he's talking about people presenting other ideas as their own. And I'm like, I wonder if I can make money doing that. And then I thought to myself, okay. And he's like, well, here's this other video that no one watched. And he zoomed in and it has 5,000 views. And I'm like, no one watched a video with 5,000 views? How many listens to our podcast get? Like 40? I think we can plagiarize all we want. We're never making money with this.
Well, see, that'd be the problem. The minute we start plagiarizing, we'll find some success because, you know, we're leaning on
a good idea.
Yeah. Creative people with like artistic inclinations and talent.
Oh, talent.
Charisma.
Three ones, baby. Three ones.
Actually, this is something you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So we were watching, we had our official actual in-person get together. And one of the things that we did while you were here was watch the Dungeons and Dragons movie. And I've seen this in other places and I've thought about it in other contexts, but I thought this is a really good example to start a conversation. Actually ruins so many things in so many ways, especially like if it's clearly comedy or a generic idea or presentation, like small inaccuracies are totally fine. And why I bring this up is that I counted the number of wild shapes that the druid goes through. Yeah. She goes like owl, bear, horse, hawk, mouse, fly, whatever. So I wondered, like, okay, so there's seven in that particular sequence, and this is me going, actually right to the hilt and absolutely fucking ruining this.
Now we need to paint the picture, because not only are you saying actually after the fact, while we were watching the movie, yes, you were sitting beside me and you turned in the middle of that sequence, just before Dork goes from like cat to deer or something. Yep. And you pointed it out. I forget what you said. That's too many wild shapes or something like that.
I said, how many wild shapes is that? So a druid gets seven wild shapes, right? I started making notes because I was curious at this point, right? And the reason that I'm bringing this up is because it is totally fine that they did this. It is against the rules of D&D, and that's okay. It's in a movie. It's special. It's the rule of cool, and it should be fine. But it's level 20 before she can do that. And if she's a level 20 druid, what the hell is she doing running around with all of these mooks? Anyway, my point is that it is absolutely like there is no reason to actually that scene, because it doesn't matter. It fits the story, and that's the point.
Yep.
And that got me thinking about sort of gatekeeping of things. So many of the hobbies that we are involved with, there's gatekeeping to an extreme degree. And that's one of the things that sort of keeps people out of D&D and various similar hobbies, right? Is there's always a bunch of grognards who are like, actually, you can't do that. Actually, you should read the manual. RTFM, noob. And I don't know. That's just bad.
I want to draw a distinction here. There's a big difference between a rules lawyer and somebody who wields the rules like a club.
Yeah.
Having a rules lawyer at your table, if they're there to be supportive, right? Like, even as a DM, like, I don't. You know, on rules that I don't know all the time. If there's new players at the table, having somebody at the table that can quickly grok the rule, the spirit of the rule, what it's trying to achieve and distill that down so that a player at the table isn't having to turn to page 153 of the 2014 edition of the Player's Handbook, read paragraphs 2 and 3, and then the explainer, which shows exceptions to the rule on the following page. We'll wait 20 minutes while you get through that, and then we'll continue playing our game. Like, that can be helpful. Not every rules lawyer is the kind of person that is looking to pull the fun and leech it right out of a game, right?
Yes. Yeah, there's a massive difference between, are you sure you can do that? And because there's been a couple of games I've mentioned before that the guys I used to play with on Sundays were much more about rules than they were about story. Mm-hmm. That's not entirely true. Like, they were interested in the story, but they were approaching it very much from a mechanical viewpoint. And there were a few times where I would bring up like, how are you casting that spell like that? And a lot of times the answer was because of feature X, Y, and Z, because I don't know all the rules either. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, if it's done, I think that that's kind of an okay thing where you can say like, okay, why does that work? Okay, it works like that. Cool. Carry on. Because sometimes you're going to catch people where they go, oh, does it not work like that? Right. Or, and even then, like, it's like, well, okay, well, we'll worry about it after. Right.
Yeah. And what I would say with that group coming to that table, and maybe you were a bit of an outsider and it wasn't maybe explicitly discussed at the beginning, But it would have became very clear within a couple of sessions, this is what this group is. Mm-hmm. You know, they're enjoying this game a different way from maybe I would normally enjoy it. They're finding the fun in the minutiae of the mechanics and optimization, and mm-hmm. they're playing it maybe even a little bit more like a video game. When I play video games, especially in like MMO land, like I really enjoyed finding the meta, finding the unique optimizations, and trying to turn the mechanics and operate within those limits to my benefit. Mm-hmm. That's not how everybody else played the game, but I did that. And when you come to that table and it's very clear that this is the way we're going to play this game and enjoy it, I mean, that's the social contract, and you can kind of operate within that.
Yeah. And to a very great extent, I did. I mean, I originally came to that table with, like, not elaborate, but sort of intertwined backstory ideas. And, you know, here is how my character views the world, and here's sort of what my goals are. And they got used to a certain extent, right? But mostly it was about beating up monsters and taking their stuff. Mm-hmm. Right, which is a perfectly valid way to enjoy the game. It's how I enjoyed the game when I started, right? Like our group is the first group that I've played with that has been more interested in story and character development than anything else.
And as a player, this is not aimed at you, but anybody else playing the game, and we're not even in table talk yet, but it would be okay for you to come to a table like that, discover over a few sessions, oh, these guys are having a good time, but the way they're doing it isn't for me. I'm mm-hmm. bouncing off this particular style of play, and to just sort of step away saying, hey guys, I mean, you seem cool, but I'm not finding the fun the same way you guys are. I'm going to, you know, find something that is more of a fit for me. That's fine. Where you notice that stereotypical sort of, actually annoying in a bad way kind of person is when like the social contract seems to skew the opposite direction. Here's a bunch of people around a table that are playing it, you know, rule of cool or whatever. They're enjoying the game a different way, and then they step in and interrupt. You know, it's like hit the pause button. It's you can't do that. It's never what you can do. So actually, you can't do that.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing, and that's exactly the angle that I was coming at that from, is that, you know, actually, no, you can't, right? And to an extent, I understand it, right? Because it's often someone sort of feeling powerless, trying to find a lever for what have I got power over, right? And knowledge of the rules is a power like that. Right, it's a sort of a personal agency that you can go, I know what the rules are. I'm able to tell you, no, you can't do that. Ha ha. You know, I am valuable and useful.
But what I would say is, if you are that person and you understand the rules, you can find that lever by telling the people around the table what they can do. And that will be received very, very differently.
It's harder to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think we've spoken before. You think about how dumb is the average person. Half of them are dumber. And I think probably you'd need to be an above average person to find the positive way to spin that kind of behavior.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Right? But it is possible.
Oh, sure.
And sometimes it's about even just playing the right class, playing the right character that allows you in character to lift everybody else at the table up. Play a bard, play a cleric, something like that, where it's just, if you want to focus on that minutia, if you can almost every other turn say to somebody, actually, you're going to get a +4 there as well, which is going to make the difference between you failing and succeeding on that, because you have bardic inspiration for me, or you're within 10 feet of my aura as a paladin, or whatever it is. Like, there's ways for you to get that in a group that isn't negative.
And we're back into the idea that cooperation is better than competition.
Yeah.
You don't have to fight for the spotlight. You can share it. You can turn up the spotlight on another character and thus put some of it on you.
I found it particularly amusing as we're sitting and watching something that we've both called an amazing movie, We both love that Dungeons and Dragons movie. And we've talked about, you know what? Yes, they've taken creative liberties and freedoms with all kinds of stuff. I wasn't sure when you said it, if you were holding the remote control, getting ready to hit the pause button or not.
No, absolutely not. This is another thing too, because the motivations for actually change as well. And it's a little bit, I find like there are different motivations behind mansplaining.
Yeah.
Right.
That was very much, I took it as a, I know the rules. I know you know the rules. So this is me giving you a little bit of a wink and a nod while we're in a dark room saying, I bet you noticed that too.
More or less. Yeah. It was the sort of, hey, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Here's an inside joke that we're both going to get. And for me, a lot of the time, I don't know if I mentioned this last episode, but my wife actually me last week or 2 weeks ago, at some point in the recent past, I can't remember what it was about, and it's not important. I'm just very proud of her for having done it. But when we do that to each other, because she and I do that back and forth a fair bit, it's always very much tongue in cheek. We both understand what the joke is.
Yeah.
And that makes it a whole lot different from, actually, I'm so much better than you. Oh my God. Here's the knowledge that I have that you don't.
Early parting gift that is sort of sneaking something in. The same guys that do the College Humor Dimension 20 stuff put out a show called Actually.
I know, it's awesome.
Yeah. Check it out. There's some of the older stuff is on YouTube, and there's a ton of shorts from it. It is very much taking the piss, because it's also making fun of the trope of the actually guy.
My favorite, they had the first one I watched was the one with Matt Mercer on it. I don't know if they've done more than one, but they gave him a Dungeons and Dragons read through, right? And they're like, there are seven errors in here, and you got to do actually and list them out. And he made a list and he went, actually, there's 9.
To which you probably said 11.
Yes, I did. In fact, well, I had more time, right? Because I could pause it and go, let me look that up. But yes, there were more than they thought there were. And that's one of those things, right? Like that happens in golf as well, because the rules of golf are complicated, arcane, and useful. Like they're some of them are like, oh my God, what? So there are multiple articles that have shown up in various magazines over the years. Things like, here are 10 rules that golfers break all the time without realizing it. And I'm sure that Dungeons and Dragons is like that too. Like there are rules. I know that there are rules that our group breaks specifically because I intentionally do that. There are some rules that, like, for some tables don't make sense. Break them. Like who cares? Oh no, the balance of the game is ruined. What balance? This is not an MMO. You have a judge, jury, and, you know, pseudo-god sitting at one end of the table. Make them make the decision. Boom, done.
Yeah.
Balance not required.
You know, if you're worried about the balance, you're misunderstanding the victory condition.
Yes.
You know?
There isn't one.
Are you having fun? You win.
Yes. That's it. It's literally an excuse. It's this right here. It's an excuse for friends to sit down and shoot the shit.
That isn't a tabletop thing. That is a life thing. Mm-hmm. If you're having fun, you win. But are you having the fun at the expense of everybody else's fun?
Yeah.
Here's one for you. In a group, and I know you and Cindy play games on the regular. A fair bit of Yahtzee, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Do you play Monopoly amongst peers?
Never. I learned the object lesson that Monopoly was intended to teach when I was about 11.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not a game that everybody around the table can have fun at.
It's not a game. It's literally not. It's a life lesson that we shouldn't let someone get all the money.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just it. Like that's what I'm talking about, is between the difference between cooperation and competition. Like Monopoly is a game where there is one winner and only one winner, and that person can only win by making everyone else miserable.
But I would argue, like, there's other games where that holds true. Like Catan is an example of a game where there's only one winner, really, playing the regular game by the regular rules. It is competitive, but it isn't as a person who doesn't win, you don't feel like you've just sat through 3 hours of abuse somehow, where Monopoly is, you know.
Well, there's one major difference there in that everyone in Catan gets things. And yes, you trade back and forth, and there's the condition of, you know, they put the robber down and they steal one card.
Yeah,
in Monopoly, you win by taking everyone else's money.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's the difference. It's not we're all competing to reach the same goal. It's we're all competing to beat each other into the dirt.
Yes.
Anyway, I mean, there's been many, many sort of analyses over the years of why Monopoly is just a bad game. Because it is. It's a bad game. And it's not fun.
Actually.
No, you can't actually that, because I'm right. Unless you were just about to say, actually, you're right. Because then, yeah, I know.
I can't even in good faith play devil's advocate with Monopoly. It is a game that is, it's an interesting character study. Because you watch people play it and everybody has their own homebrew rules to Monopoly. That is their way of either trying to make the game fun, trying to make the game less fun, trying to make it shorter, trying to make it longer, whatever. Everybody's got their own vision of what Monopoly is in their head, and it's almost not the rules as written. Despite millions and millions of people having their own rules to Monopoly, I'd argue that none of them have managed to turn it into a good, fun game for everybody.
I would suggest you're probably right.
Fuck Monopoly.
Yes, fuck Monopoly hard, in the ass, sideways.
Well, there's our show title.
Interesting bit of trivia, which is another thing that comes out of nerddom with actually, is Monopoly was actually originally invented as a lesson about capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another game that was supposed to come right after it to show you what happens when everyone cooperates.
And worth calling out, the game was not invented by Parker Brothers.
The game was stolen. Yes. It was stolen and they got rich based on that. So Welcome to capitalism, kids.
Yes, when the capitalists are winning from the most anti-capitalist sentiments, you know we've done fucked up something.
Yeah. I mean, that really could be the tagline for human history, right?
We done fucked up.
Humanity, we done fucked up.
Yeah, I think it was a couple episodes ago I said that this experiment's clearly failed.
Well, you know, in the beginning, the universe was created. This has largely been regarded as a bad idea.
Hey, do you want to talk about some video games?
Sure, let's do that.
I used to be an adventurer like you.
Stay a while and listen.
I've actually been playing some video games. Before we get into that, though, I'm interpreting your note here as the fact that you've started playing Baldur's Gate 3 again.
I did. I started because last time we talked, you said, hey, try things in story mode. And I've discovered that story mode is not actually the problem. It's not the difficulty of the game that is the issue. The issue for me is that quite a few of modern games are about really big narrative arcs, and really what I'm hankering for is more complicated Pong, right? Because Baldur's Gate 3, I mean, it's a wonderful game, it's a great story, but I would much prefer to consume the story of Baldur's Gate as a movie or as a novel than as a game. And I would much prefer to go through Baldur's Gate 3 as a game, like cut out all of the story elements and just give me all the fights. Right? Because in my mind, they're two separate things. And I know that's not true of everyone, and that's fine. But for me, it's not about getting through the thing quickly or trying to make it easier. It's about there's just too much story there for me.
See, you are your old D&D group when it comes to Baldur's Gate 3.
Because it's a video game.
What I suggested was don't switch it to story mode or easy mode and then try and play it the way you've been playing it. I said, switch it to story mode, breeze through the mechanics, consume the story so that you can enjoy that, much like a book or a movie is sort of a basic interactive fiction. And then you can go down and get bogged back in a replay where you've got the difficulty high and you want to play, you know, Final Fantasy versus Final Fantasy Tactics. You want Baldur's Gate 3 Tactics Edition.
I do. And well, but here's the thing is that I started a story mode and I'm like, okay, I won't worry about the combat. So I'll just fucking click on things and attack them and they'll die and I'll move on. It's fine. But here's the thing is that when I do that, I enjoy the story, but the story has too many fucking interruptions in it. At that point, combat is interrupting the story that I'm enjoying. So basically my point is that I don't want the world to change. I have just come to a greater understanding of how I consume things. And video games for me are much more about, because this is a bizarre thing too, is one of the reasons that I enjoyed EverQuest more than WoW is that WoW has more integrated sort of story as you go through it, right? Or at least the modern WoW does. Like there's lore and stuff. EQ, the lore is there if you want it, but sort of the core game loop for people who have stuck around is punch monster, take its stuff. Which is what I enjoy in a video game. I mentioned a couple of episodes ago that I was playing through Portal again and really enjoying it because it was literally about, there's some story, but it's very much to the side of the game, right? The game is put a portal down and jump through it and try and get to where you're going. When the two things are running hardcore in parallel, I really enjoy it. When it's some story, some combat, some story, some combat, some story. If you could skip past all of the combat, I would probably really enjoy the story. If I could skip past all of the story, I would really enjoy the combat. I think they're both great.
I find it funny, and not to, again, skip ahead to table talk, because we've got table talk stuff to do. But I find it funny that you've intentionally drawn a contrast between your old D&D group and the way they enjoyed it. And then you as a DM creating this world that you wanted to create and create this story rather than just, hey, get a bunch of people together and here's a bunch of random encounter tables.
When I'm talking to people, I enjoy the story more. I just, D&D is a different thing for me, right? Like Baldur's Gate to me is supposed to be a video game. And I have found that I'm just not enjoying that. And it's not to say that it's bad, just that I'm not enjoying it.
Actually, you're wrong. No, that's fine. Yeah. I get it. You know, part of turning the difficulty down in some of those games for me is me saying, you know what? I'm enjoying the story and I would prefer it with less interruptions. Now, I'm fine with some interruptions, right? Because to me, that's important to establish that immersion around character development and stuff. I need to be able to feel like a badass, not show me that I'm a badass kind of thing. So sometimes turning the difficulty down can achieve that too, right? Because you can face roll stuff where it might be super difficult. And sometimes it's like, oh, I'm a superhero now. And that allows you to enjoy a superhero-like story sometimes a little bit easier than playing it super difficult would. Because there's that disconnect between the character I'm playing being a badass and me as a player being a badass for conquering whatever the difficult challenge is mechanically of the game. And I enjoy games like that too. But I don't look at a Baldur's Gate 3 and say, oh, here's, you know, fantasy combat mechanic simulator. Like I look at it as here's a game that has a narrative arc. I approach it more like D&D. Mm-hmm. And combat is a part of that.
Yeah. And that's part of the reason I'm having difficulty reconciling that.
Mm-hmm. So interesting question then for you. Does that mindset that you have in a game change when you're playing a character that is a built character, a character that is a blank slate character, or whether you're playing an existing character?
To an extent, yeah. Because I approach, like, for example, because the contrast here is two games that I'm currently playing is Baldur's Gate 3 and Horizon Forbidden West. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't gone any farther in Forbidden West, which is sort of hilarious. I mean, I downloaded it in April, you know, and it's now August, and I've gone through basically the tutorial. So yeah, I do approach that very differently. Like I've started Baldur's Gate 3 over many times because there are many different ways to experience the game. Right. But in the Horizon games, it's like, no, you are Aloy. right? You are just going through the set piece. So that, to me, even though there's a lot of story in between the combats, feels to me an awful lot more like a game and less of a... I guess it's because it's a little bit more railroady, so it feels more gamey to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, obviously, it's still sandboxy in that you can run around and do stuff. But, like, the next thing in the story is the next thing in the story. You know, and you don't get to go, well, I don't like that my hair is red, I'm going to change my hair to blue, or whatever. Which I recognize is kind of silly, but I do that kind of stuff a lot. Right? Like, we were playing a multiplayer game, and one of the things I do at the beginning of every session is change my hair. Why? I don't know. Because I can. Because I'm jealous that my character has hair. So, yeah, it's definitely different. Like, if I have a, because I have an established character that I'm, like, level, what does it go up to? 12, I think. So I'm either level 11 or level 12. And I'm in the final act doing, like, a bunch of the stuff. But it's just, I just got bogged down with the weight of all of the things that I have already done. It's like, I got to remember all this shit? Like, what? Like, what did I do? It's been 2 weeks since I played this game. Like, what has this character done? What is this character's history with this person? What's the next thing that I'm supposed to do? Oh, for goodness sake, just give me an Umber Hulk that I can punch in the face.
So how much of that problem is that you made the Marvel mistake at the beginning instead of the end? Like, Marvel created this cinematic universe, and then when they ran out of ideas, it's like multiverse. Now you got to keep track of all these different timelines. You restarted Baldur's Gate 72 times as different characters, and now in that gray goo between your ears, you have to keep track of, well, which of my 17 playthroughs did I do this and that? And you've got the multiverse problem.
I do. I absolutely do. Yeah. I call it alt-itis, right? Like, which button do I push to do the thing I want to do? I don't know. What abilities does this character have? Shit, what gear am I wearing? Right? All of that is a problem. Right? And it's a me problem. Like, let's establish that, because Baldur's Gate 3 is awesome.
Yes.
I am not.
Well, I've been playing a game that might be a little bit more narratively up your alley. I've been playing Assassin's Creed Origins. This is the game that I tried to play before and bounced off of. I'm not really much of an Assassin's Creed player, like the old school games. I didn't get into I played the first game, I think, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is, you know, it's edgier Prince of Persia or whatever, right? Because it was sort of not a spiritual successor, but it was like, okay, we've made Prince of Persia, now let's make this. And it didn't appeal to me as much as Prince of Persia at the time, so I really never got into them. And I'm, as a rule, not... Well, I have to say as a rule in quotation marks, because I'm also a hypocrite. I'm, as a rule, not a big fan of those types of games where the core gameplay loop is stealth around forever, easy kill. Stealth around forever, easy kill kind of thing.
Unless it's Ghost Recon.
Yeah. Well, that's why I gotta, you know, say I'm a bit of a hypocrite. But I never got into the original Assassin's Creed games. I never really got into Hitman, as an example. No. They all have their own interesting mechanics and, like, the diversity of ways you can sort of achieve that basic kind of thing, right? The basic goal of stealthily killing someone or whatever.
Yeah.
But I did, because I love Greek mythology and just the actual history of Greece and the Mediterranean, that whole area of the world. So I got right into Assassin's Creed Odyssey when it came out. It was a second game where they shifted gears and tried to turn Assassin's Creed from what it used to be into very much the Far Cry kind of open world.
Mm-hmm.
Ubisoft, like every game they've made in the last 15 years has kind of been that. But it struck the right chord with me. Like, it's very much, if you like a Horizon Zero Dawn, it feels kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
With Greek and history appropriate cosplay, right? A lot of work put into nailing the vibes of it. But they open up the core mechanics of the game to other ways of playing it. It's not just stealth kill. Like you can have more in your face sort of martial combat. You can have all of that shit. I loved Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Intimidating game because it has that Ubisoft sort of like, here's a big map with a bunch of markers on it. You know, go to a marker, do some stuff, go to another marker, do some stuff. A lot of people just found that overwhelming, like the actual world space and the amount of stuff you can do in Odyssey is it's a lot. I can understand how it would be overwhelming. I didn't find it overwhelming. I did replay the game, and like after the main game finished, there's another sort of DLC expansion-y kind of thing that you can play afterwards that builds off of the main game. And I enjoyed it the first time I played through it. I didn't have any real inclination to go through it again on my second playthrough. After I played Odyssey the first time, I went back and tried to play Assassin's Creed Origins, which is the game that I'm playing now, which was the first game that they tried to go into that different direction, go the more open world sandboxy, blah, 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 typical Ubisoft game. And I bounced off of it for really dumb reasons. Like, I enjoyed the setting. I was enjoying the character. But coming fresh off of Odyssey, everything was slightly less refined. And the default control scheme was nowhere near as good. If anything, it was that default control scheme through, even though I have the ability to edit, and I'm playing mouse and keyboard, I'm not playing with a controller. Even though I had the ability to change a lot of it, I could never dial it in to feel the way that Odyssey felt at the time. So it's like, okay, this is I'm fighting with the game to enjoy it. So I put it down. It's been, I don't know how many years it's been. I've decided, yeah, it's been long enough since I've played Odyssey or even Horizon or something else of that ilk where I would be comparing it mechanically to, like the muscle memory isn't there anymore. And now that I've put, I don't know, maybe 4 hours into it, I'm really not struggling the way I was with the interface and the controls and stuff. And I'm just enjoying it for the game that it is. And so far it's been pretty good.
So you're saying it's not the original Fallout?
No. No, it was, you know, the controls and stuff aren't bad. They were just different. And when you're fighting against your own muscle memory, and your body and brain is telling you, no, this is how it should be, and you can't make it that way. I would liken it to all of the times that I tried to jump from World of Warcraft into other MMO games, where whether it was even a little bit into EverQuest, but WildStar was one I tried to get into, Star Wars The Old Republic, and you just, I had a particular way that I played WoW. I had a particular UI setup and customization that I did. I was playing with my Logitech G13 game board, and I would make my UI kind of match it. Whenever I jumped into something that didn't allow me to do that, after a million hours of playing this game this way that I do, it didn't matter how good the game was at that point. I was resistant as a person because playing the game mechanically, I couldn't do it the way I was going to do it.
Well, it's super hard. Yeah. I mean, that almost locked me out of Baldur's Gate 3, honestly. Like the original sort of, okay, so it's point and click, but the camera doesn't, oh my God, I can't control the camera. I can only zoom in and out, and it zooms in and out in an arc. Oh my God.
I mean, I had to do an apology episode on this very podcast about Baldur's Gate 3 because the camera issues and control scheme was so hard for me to adjust to.
Yeah.
And I still had to not play defaults. Like I had to customize it a certain amount just to make it palatable. But I was able to finally get past that.
I'm still struggling with the camera, to be honest. Yeah. Most of the time I can just overlook it, but it's just like, let me look up. Like there's a dragon in this game. The characters comment on it. I'm not allowed to look at it.
Yeah.
Like who thought that was a good idea? And I know that it's possible because people have modded the game to make it possible. Oh, well, it's just another cloud to yell at, only this one's dragon shaped.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's very much what Assassin's Creed Origins was to me. now that I've distanced myself from some of the other games telling me how it should work, I'm able to more easily adjust to how it does work in this game. And while I still find it a little annoying, things like, you know, my dodge roll button being on space, but my jump that isn't actually a jump being on alt, and I can't put them together. It's like, what are you doing to me here?
That's wrong. Like, I'm not going to tell you anything about race, color, creed, or religion, but that right there, that's wrong.
Yeah.
Objectively. I'm pretty sure it says something in the Holy Scrolls of video gaming that's just not right.
Pretty sure.
Thou shalt not.
I think Jesus did a whole big thing on it at one point.
I was listening to his podcast the other day. I'm pretty sure he mentioned it.
Yeah. But anyway, if you have a game that like you bounced off of for purely mechanical reasons like that, because it wasn't living up to your expectations of a game you'd recently played, and you've given yourself time to lose that muscle memory, go back and give a game that you bounced off of a try, because I'm really enjoying it so far. Now, I'm only at the point where I'm getting into Alexandria. I've been sort of taking my time pissing around in sort of the starter area and then sort of a middle area that you run into before getting there. So I think I'm like level 12, like really just been faffing about, but I've been enjoying it because there's a lot of production value in those games, despite the formulaic Far Cry style thing. Like there's a lot to do. It's executed mostly very well. All the side quests are, there's enough there. It's all voice acted. Like, you know, that production value adds a lot to even fetch quests, right? Like, go here. Oh, my Book of the Dead was stolen. All right, well, I'll go to this mausoleum thing where there's some bandits that have set up, but I'll kill the bandits. I'll get your book. I'll bring it back to you. Oh, no, he's dead. Spoiler alert for one of the side quests.
Oh, man. I was totally going to play that game, but you've spoiled it now, so I'm not going to.
Yes. give it a try. And for you, having said that you like Horizon Zero Dawn, you're getting into Forbidden West. Once you've finished Forbidden West, I would strongly recommend going back and trying Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Maybe if you like what you see, play Origins first, because you'll like Origins more if you play it before Odyssey.
I almost would like to go back and try some of the original Assassin's Creed games. But like we had this problem when we tried to do like original Fallout and older games like that. A lot of times we go back and the control scheme wasn't really a standard yet.
No.
Right? And you couldn't change anything. So it's like, here's what the keys do. And you need like a word perfect template kind of thing in order to make it work.
Yeah.
Gah.
You've been reading more of your books?
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about them.
A book?
That's right. When I was your age, television was called books. And this is a special book.
So, I have been reading the 1632 series of books, and I read 1632, 1633, 1634, and I think the last one was 1635. And I think I'm over it now, right? Like, I really enjoy the idea. I really enjoy the characters they came up with and some of the situations that they put into. But a lot of it is kind of, like, it's military in a way that I don't find entertaining, right? And once again, that's very much a me thing, right? Because it's very, like, it's, I assume that it's well-researched. I don't know. It's very detailed, anyway, about a lot of stuff. And like the provinces and the people who are in them and what their motivations are and why they're attacking this and why so-and-so is attacking such other thing. But it's one of those things where I would almost prefer to have it in a paper copy so that I could go, okay, boring stuff, boring stuff, boring stuff. Oh, okay, here we go. Here comes the sword fight, right? Like Princess Bride style. Because there's a lot of descriptions of, you know, this ruler is upset with that ruler because they wore the wrong hat to a, you know, whatever. It's like, just get me to the point. Okay, Jeff Higgins is doing a thing with Gretchen. Cool. This is going to be a fun little sort of, there's anecdotes in the middle of a big history happening, right? But there's a lot of sort of almost scholarly analysis of big history in an alternate universe. And it's good. I just didn't find it really entertaining.
That's fair.
So I have switched. I'm currently rereading a book that I read a long time ago by Elizabeth Moon called, the series is called The Deed of Paxinarian. The first book is called Sheep Farmer's Daughter. And Elizabeth Moon, I guess, was actually a Marine who saw combat. So it's the story of basically a sheep farmer's daughter who runs away to become join a mercenary company. You know, medieval fantasy, high fantasy stuff. But a lot of the... It has all of the right details in exactly the opposite way from the 1632 series. Mm-hmm. In that they're there, and they form sort of a backdrop for the stuff that's happening. But it's just basically mentioned in passing, right? Like there's a keep, and it's designed like this. You have all the information you need. Right. Rather than the keep is designed like this, and it's designed with these kind of nails, and the logs are laid out like this, and those logs were harvested from the, you know, the Black Forest of wherever, and that is how it's traditionally done, and that's what this does, and this is why that works.
Yeah, the word count of the flavor text shouldn't exceed the word count of the actual story and character.
Yeah. And like in a historical sort of, like it made sense in that other series because it's an alternate history. You need the historical backdrop unless you're a German history scholar, in which case you'll be either going, actually, or you'll be going, okay, this is a really good alternate history, right? But for those of us who are neither of those things, it's just a little bit boring for me.
Yeah.
So anyway, I really enjoy Elizabeth Moon's stuff. Apparently, like, she has some controversies too, but I'm glossing over that. I have no idea who she is as a person. I know that she writes a good story. And that's where I'm at.
Well, I was going to throw an EPUB at you. I have it, so I would be sharing it with you, lending you my copy of the EPUB, as it were. I've talked about wanting to go back and read the James Corey Expanse books. Having watched the show, and I've recommended the show too, and it's really good, but the books are, in general, as they usually are, better. And there's also a lot of story that takes place after the television show ends that I really want to explore. The first book is called Leviathan Wakes. If you didn't have anything in the hopper to read, I would say, hey, let's try this. I'm going to get into it too. It'd be interesting to explore how we enjoy those with you having not seen the TV series and me having watched it. And I don't know, it's been a long time since I've actually read any sci-fi.
Let's put it in the hopper after the one I'm currently reading. I'm starting to read a lot more. Like I'm reading before I fall asleep at night. So I probably have like this week and not much more on that. So I'm willing to give it a try. Who knows? Maybe I'll bounce it off it and maybe I'll love it.
All right. I'll throw the EPUB at you. Just a second quick shout out. I haven't read these yet, but I the fact that they exist warms my heart, and the way they've gone about and done it, it just makes me smile. It puts a smile on my face. So as we're sort of transitioning towards table talk anyway, you've heard me talk about Acquisitions Incorporated before. One of the original actual plays that I got into, and they're one of the few actual plays like Critical Role that has their own official Wizards of the Coast partnered material. There's an Acquisitions Incorporated book. So even if you haven't listened or watched the actual play going back to, I don't know, 2006, whenever they started it, if you play D&D, you've probably at least run into some stat blocks or character names. Jerry Holkins, so he plays Omen Drawn, one of the main Acquisitions and Corporations guys. Tycho Brahe from Penny Arcade, PAX, has released two novellas side by side. One of them is a prequel called Acquisitions Incorporated Initiation, which in and of itself, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? Hey, it's a little prequel novella. I'll go back and read that. I haven't bought it and started yet. But what puts a smile on my face and sort of a clever, he's obviously not the first person to have done this, but it is appropriate for him and these characters and whatnot. He's released a second book at the same time, a second novella called Drawn Magic, Drawn, D-R-A-N, which refers to sort of the two main ACK Inc. characters, Omen Drawn, Jim Dark Magic, who is played by Mike Krahulik, the other Penny Arcade guy.
Okay. Yep.
And it's Drawn Magic, and the description of this novella is the incredibly gay version of the Acquisitions Incorporated book that might actually be the real one. He basically wrote the novella and then the fan fiction version of the novella himself to release side by side.
So it's basically what you call it, 50 Shades of Acquisitions Incorporated.
I mean, I don't know what it is because I haven't read it yet, but it's channeling something that I find incredibly amusing. And if you're going to release some novellas and you have this community that has been, tongue in cheek kind of standing these two characters anyway, mm-hmm. You know, you get people that are always submitting like fanfic art of this online to embrace it and lean into it. And not only just like have it there, but also say, this might actually be the real one. As part of the description, like it's not the subtitle, but it is like right there. I don't know. I find it incredibly charming.
It's the same kind of thing that if you think about how Dungeons and Dragons exists in our minds, right? It's so my latest playthrough of Baldur's Gate 3 that I tried in story mode, I named my character The Darkness. Right? Because it's like just so D&D, right? It's like, I am the darkness. Everything is so dramatic. I fade into the shadows. And in reality, what you're doing is you're sitting around shoving Cheetos in your face and going, are there any girls there? Right? It's that contrast between sort of how we see ourselves and how we really are.
Yeah.
Right? On the one hand, it's like, oh, yes, I am so dramatic and mysterious. And on the other hand, it's like, no, you're not. You're wearing a funny hat and your coat smells like cats.
And you're playing fantasy Batman. Fuck off with that shit.
Yeah. I'm Man-Bat.
I haven't read those two novellas, but for anybody that has even a passing interest in Acquisitions Incorporated, I think he's selling both of them in a bundle for like $9 or $10. They're just PDFs, unfortunately, right now, but it's probably worth grabbing just for the hell of it.
I mean, you all have a printer at work, right? Just take it to work and print it.
Yeah.
Tell them I told you could do that.
Do you want to get into some limited table talk?
I think we should.
We'll keep it short. And by short, I mean we've got an hour and a half to dedicate to it starting now.
Actually, I do have to actually go somewhere in about 20 minutes. So,
all right.
We are limited, but we can't let it go by without talking about our in-person one-shot, which I thought went really well.
Yes. I've been hinting at it for a while. So I think what I'll do is I'll sort of step back here and let you talk about what happened.
Well, I'm so much worse at actually summarizing these things than you are, but it was yet another, what would you call it? Another chronicle or another installment in the Chronicle of Meepo. And unfortunately, we ripped him in half again. Spoilers, he dies. but so we start off as this sort of band of kobolds who've been sent to rescue the village idiot and the dragon person, the village dragon. And I mean, it was like a sort of a set piece combat dealy bopper with a rotating dungeon, which I thought was really clever, by the way. So on everybody's turn, sort of some section of this sort of pie-shaped thing would rotate. Like there were three, think of it like a tiered wedding cake, right? One of the tiers is going to rotate to a position based on a roll of the dice. which I thought was a really interesting mechanic. And of course, it made everybody think, okay, well, where do I want to be next time? And which way is it going to go? And trying to guess. And of course, we had my friend Mac, who has never played 5th edition before. So he's like, I don't know what the rules are, but I'm going to go here and try this and do things. And I thought he did pretty well in that setting. Although I do think that he was expecting a little bit more role playing and a little bit less combat. Right. Based on, because he's a theater kid. Mm. Right. So that's more his milieu, I guess you would say. But anyway, like the whole sort of sitting around a table, rolling dice, talking to each other, little bits of side conversations, everybody getting to laugh together, right? Without over like doing feedback versus mic and speakers and things. And it was a really good vibe. And there was cake, which makes everything better.
Cake, there was pizza. It was fantastic.
Yes.
What did you think? The sort of the important context that's missing from the description is that the shtick, the inside joke, was that as kobolds, you were trying to return Meepo and the dragon who had been abducted by an evil necromancer and his henchmen, who were our player characters from the original campaign that we accidentally got Meepo killed.
Yes, yes. Which is context, honestly, that I kind of missed. And I'm feeling a little bit stupid for having missed. Like I got that the joke was is that, like, you know, Meepo was kidnapped by our characters, but like that you just sort of put a whole new shine on it for me. It was very well done. You got to break out old man Dex's voice again.
I did.
Oh, that was great.
I enjoyed even just preparing for it. It had been like months between the time I prepped and when we actually ran it. So I forgot some of what I'd done. I was just pretty easy, like paper minis that I'd printed out using some tokens. But I went to the trouble, knowing how it was going to play out roughly, that I had a token for Meepo. And then I had two tokens for parts of Meepo. Because I figured it was probably inevitable and would be appropriate that he would get cut in half again somehow. I didn't have a script or a plan for how it was going to happen. I just knew that there was, you know, whatever. We'll find an appropriate moment for it to happen. And Cindy did the appropriate. I don't think she was thinking about doing it this way. But, you know, we had Bren up on his little sort of raised throne playing with some levers that were moving these chains in the ceiling. And she decided he had a little barrier around him that she was going to try and bust through that barrier with, Thunderwave or Shatter or something. I fudged it a little bit to allow her to do it, but in her doing it enthusiastically, shoved Bren into the wrong levers, which brought me bone down in half, basically. Slice.
Poor Meepo.
Only to be animated later. Anyway.
It was well done. I think everyone had a great time. Everyone had something to do. We all laughed at Meepo being in many pieces.
What it did do is remind me of some of the things that I'm missing running exclusively online games.
Yes. Yeah. So here's an interesting thing. So our game, I redid our map in Wonderdraft. And in doing so, that map of the landmass that you're on right now is only part of a much bigger whole. So I'm seriously thinking about actually starting an in-person group in another part of the world.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. And then maybe someday, you know, you meet up or you hear rumors of the, you know, the heroes from the other side of the world who are now doing whatever. It gives me a chance as well to develop more pieces of that world. Because honestly, that world is a little bit thin, right? Which is sort of intentional, and that will become apparent and appropriate later.
Well, there's no way I could drive up there, justify it for a weekly game, but if you're running a game every couple months or something like that, I probably could make that happen.
Well, I think probably what I'll end up doing is I'll probably end up running like a weekly game, and then do something like, I don't know, like four times a year, like spring, summer, winter, fall, pick a long weekend and do like a marathon session, you know, with guest appearances. So I don't know. We'll see how it works out, because I think that that could definitely work.
Ignoring the social element of it, which was most of the reasons playing in person was just so much better, I think we can talk about the tangible element separately. Physically picking up and rolling dice, yes, just hit different. You know, the sound of you were using a dice tower, the sound of the dice rattling through there, yeah, the paper minis and stuff, moving them. I think that was probably the less important piece of the tangible element, but having character sheets that were physical character sheets, rolling dice, looking up stuff.
I got to roll my bronze dice for the first time in anger. It was great. I'm very glad that you brought those little dice arenas too, because I rolled them the first time and thought, ooh, I don't want to roll these on my table. They will leave marks.
Yeah, I'd pick those up just to show how long it's been going since I've been wanting to get some in like in-person stuff. I think I grabbed those when we were potentially going to do a D&D one-shot on my 40th birthday LAN party thing.
Yes.
So they've basically just been sitting since then.
That's a while.
Yeah.
What is that, like 4 years?
What year is it? Yeah, 4 years.
Wow, I got it right. Look at me getting an actual time period correct. That's crazy.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to talk about in Table Talk. You got to go. So let's wrap this thing up as we always do with some parting gifts.
And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Anybody want a peanut?
So I have a parting gift, but it's not the one that I actually wrote down in the show doc.
That's not allowed.
I know, I'm breaking the rules.
Actually,
I can do that because I'm at least 50% owner of this podcast. So I mentioned that I watched H. Bomber Guy's plagiarism video today. Video essay? I don't know what to call it. Like, it's an opus almost. Like, it's massive. So I'm going to steal an idea from that video wholesale. I'm lifting it right out of his video.
You made the mistake of crediting him.
No, I'm not going to give H. Bomber Guy any credit whatsoever for stealing his idea that I'm stealing right now.
Okay.
So I'm going to start a second channel where I read random Wikipedia articles verbatim. And that's it. That's the whole channel.
I've had that idea. Not that I read it. I thought that it might be interesting to do as almost like an ASMR sleep kind of thing. Like if I could get my wife to do it with her hot voice, you know, just sit there. It could be like, there's that the joke, right? That person could read the phone book to me and I'd be into it. Well, Wikipedia is basically reading the phone book.
Kind of. There's some interesting stuff there. I used to, back when I had a job where I had some amount of free time, but no access to anything. I would go on Wikipedia because it was we were allowed to look at Wikipedia and anything we want. And I just click, like, what are today's articles?
Yep.
Where does that take me to?
Follow the rabbit hole.
Yeah. And some of those rabbit holes lead you down interesting spaces. And I mean, I don't know how accurate they are, and I don't care. It's just information, right? It was just I was reading it for entertainment.
Yeah, it's anyway. It's not for everyone, but I do like the idea of some sort of, like, Wikipedia roulette.
Yeah.
In an audio form.
Sure, let's do it. So a serious parting gift, though. I was watching Scott Galloway's TED Talk. He talks about youth and wealth, the future. He's surprisingly frank about a bunch of stuff. He's got a whole bunch of academic credits. And he is he's late Gen X, I think, or early Gen X. So he's old-ish now. But his take on what the world has become and what, like, what part we've all played in it is kind of interesting. It's a nifty perspective, and it's not one you would expect from someone of that age. Worth checking out.
I'll do that. I gotta say, this tequila hitting all the wrong ways when I started, and I don't know what it says about me that I'm kind of into it now.
Well, I mean, you have the whole rest of the bottle.
Yeah.
I'm sad I don't get to stick around and watch all of it.
Well, it's been good talking to you, man.
Yes, and you, sir.
Go do that thing that you have to do that's mysterious, and I'm sure not at all. What was it you accused me of at the start of last episode?
Oh, my God.
Having relations with...
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm about to go and hit a small ball with my stick. Pants.